Welcome to another edition of the Columbia University Sports Podcast, Basketball Edition. I'm Joe Favorito, along with my co-host Tom Richardson. Tom, welcome.
Hi, Joe. How are you today?
Good. So for those joining for the first time, in addition to our regular weekly podcast about sports business, we've been doing a semi-weekly or almost weekly now, looking at the men's and women's basketball programs at Columbia. We've talked to the two head coaches. We've talked to players on both teams, and as we kind of move through the season, we're going to touch on various cast of characters that are around the program, involved with the program, coaching the program, broadcasting the program, to give everyone a really kind of interesting look at the goings-on for Columbia's men's and women's basketball teams. So we sit here just after Thanksgiving, and we're going to talk to the men's basketball director of operations, Jonathan Safir, today. Jonathan also happens to be in our Columbia University sports graduate program. So, Jonathan, welcome along.
Welcome. Thanks for having me.
Jonathan, why don't you just kind of, as we get through now, you know, you guys have started the season now. Why don't you kind of give the listeners a little bit of a feel for exactly what it is that your role is now, and then kind of how you got to the program and what your role was under the previous administration when you first arrived at Columbia?
Yeah, so that's a great question, Joe, because Director of Basketball Operations, the role is sort of a jack of all trades. So I'm helping out with, you know, helping out all facets of the program, whether it's alumni and social media stuff, team travel, food, meals, making sure any school issues or study halls, anything that needs to be known about that. In addition to obviously wanting to be a coach, this position is sort of viewed as the stepping stone to an assistant coach, which is sort of counterintuitive when you think about it, because the director of basketball operations is not allowed to physically be on the floor and coach. So last year, my main role as graduate manager, in addition to helping out and assisting the director of basketball operations with all his daily needs, was to be on call to rebound and be available to help the guys get better on the court. Now I'm not able to work out with the guys or coach them really at all. So it's a little bit different in that regard. It's more of an administration role, so to speak.
So, Jonathan, you played basketball at Vassar, correct?
That is correct.
So I was curious. I mean, I want to talk a little bit more about the difference between the two roles, but I'd love to get your perspective as a D3 player, getting a first-hand look, very close look at an Ivy League program like Columbia's in a competitive conference, playing some really competitive teams out of the conference during the season. What's the difference in the quality and level of play?
First off, I have the utmost respect for all Division III athletes. I understand and respect that grind and lifestyle. Totally different. Here, we have a practice slot that our student athletes schedule classes around. We travel for almost all trips the day before for games like Miami and Maine. We're going to fly. As a former Division III athlete, we didn't really fly anywhere. We drove and bused a lot of times. Almost all trips were same-day trips. We eat extremely well on road trips here. There's a much bigger budget, I would say, based on my experiences and how that money's spent in terms of just overall student-athlete experience. There's tutoring and priority class scheduling here, which was not at Vassar. There's just a whole world of difference in addition to, obviously, this being the Division I level as opposed to Division III. And while we're not a scholarship league, based off any measure, we're a top 10 or 12 league in the country. So the level of play is significantly higher. So it's really a world of difference, to be honest, even though one would think that the Division III level, the high academic Division III level, would be nip and tuck with the Ivy League, but I would not say that's the case, per se.
And you've obviously been around some of the more successful Columbia programs the last couple of years. Why don't you kind of take us through what a day is like in your world? Usually, you know, most people say no 2 days are the same, but what time do you get up? What's it like? What's your first contact with athletes? And then how do you fit in any of the academic stuff that you have to do, because you know you're well on your way to finishing the sports management program as well?
Yeah, that's a great question. No 2 days are alike, without a doubt. It sort of depends the time of year. Right now is actually our busiest time of the season. We're in the midst of five-game, 11-day stretch, as well as our 10 or 11 non-league games, all condensed between the November 13th tip-off and December 11th, when our students finish classes to begin finals, because it's an Ivy League rule that you're not allowed to have games during study week or finals. So really our non-conference schedule is 2 weeks shorter than every other team in the country, every other league in the country, which makes things tighter. And when we get to Ivy play, Ivy games are all Friday, Saturday, so I love Ivy season. It's great. It's also the most routine. You know, the same thing every time. You know, we play Friday, Saturday. We're going to be off Sunday. We're going to have a hard practice Monday. Tuesday will be an off day. Wednesday, Thursday, we'll begin prep for Friday. We'll play our game Friday, and then we'll get ready for Saturday and play Saturday. And you sort of just repeat that process six times, because Cornell, you play on back-to-back Saturdays, so it's a little bit different. But eight total weeks and six times of Friday, Saturdays, it's almost like a football schedule. We play weekends, and guys they don't really have to miss class. You don't have to worry about that as much, because we just leave on Thursday nights. And I'd say right now, typical day right now, I'm getting up at about 6:30, 6:45. I try and be in the office no later than 7:30. I live about 15 minutes away, a 15-minute walk. And then I'm just around on call for whatever that day may bring. And then I get a lot of work done. I try and get a lot of work done from about 7:30, 7:45, have my coffee and breakfast, and right up to practice at about 12:30. We'll usually meet as a staff at some point during the morning, get ready for practice. Practice is 1 to 4. And then I'll try and steal a quick workout in after practice, and then do whatever's needed to be done after practice. And then if I have class that night, which right now is only 1 day a week on Wednesdays, I'll go to class, and I try and do all my whatever schoolwork I have to do either on Sundays or from about 9 p.m. on, because I do not – I don't want to be – I won't let myself be doing schoolwork while I'm in work, while I'm in the office. There was a good line I had Coach Smith had a great line when he told – when he was talking to someone else, I forget who, back last year. He goes, this kid pulled a 3-9 or whatever it was, and I never saw him open a textbook while I'm here. So I try and keep that going, because I don't want – I like to be considered a coach, or I guess director of basketball operations first and student second. I want to make sure that I'm on call for whatever may be needed at all times, and whenever I can find time to do schoolwork, that's when I do it.
That's great, Jonathan. When I visited practice when we were starting – on this Cusp Show basketball edition journey, I got to visit practice a couple weeks ago, and I saw you standing there during a very intense practice with a tablet computer. I'm not sure which it was, an iPad or a Surface. And you were madly tapping away on the software that you were using, which I understand is KeyMotion. Could you tell us about what you're using? I know with KeyMotion in particular was one of the Dodgers accelerator companies this past year, actually the last few months, and I was fascinated to see it in action when you gave me a little quick demo. But tell everybody about KeyMotion and what your responsibility is for that.
KeyMotion is tremendous. It is a video coordinator or director of operations dream. It makes film significantly easier. It's a set it and forget it type thing, so I put in our practice from 1 to 4, and it'll record. The cameras are in the gym. So we have a camera that is at about half court, and then one that is right on the scoreboard. So you get a small screen picture of the scoreboard as well as the game going on, the practice going on, and it travels the ball and movement. So if all 10 people are on one side of the court, the camera will zoom in and zone in on that side of the court. The ball transitions and moves, the camera will follow the ball. So it's really cool in that regard. And then about talking about us tagging, so during practice I'll sit there and tag all of our plays and actions and drills, so that after practice it saves a ton of time. Coach Engels can just either go on the KeyMotion and type or press, I want to see play XYZ, or I want to see us doing this drill, and boom, he's got it all to his iPad. Or you can upload and download it onto computer film software called SportsCode, which also keeps the tags. So I can bring in a player and say, my assistant coach can bring in a player, I can say, hey, look, here is one of our plays, you're doing this wrong, we should fix that, and it's all automated right there for you right after practice. And then another ridiculously cool feature is that I can send those clips from my iPad to their phones or emails right after practice. So in theory, by the time a player showers after practice and gets to his class or eating or whatever, he can be sitting there in the dining hall and watching bits and pieces or an entire practice. So it's really unique and really cool, and I think it really helps the Lions.
When you mention the camera or cameras in the gym, are there some robotics involved? Like how is it tracking the ball action?
Yeah, I'm not fully fluent in the exact robotics of it. I know they came, there was a 2-day process. They came one day in July, the Key Motion people came in July to look at our gym and see where they wanted to put in the cameras and measure everything out. And then they came one day early August, and it was a full day, 9-to-5 project of installing the cameras and getting it up there and making sure it works. But I believe it is some sort of robotic and advanced technology, and that's why Milt Lee is going to make a lot of money with this thing.
So in other words, part of the system is the installation mm-hmm. and concurrent use of cameras with the actual software on the tablet.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, and to be clear, you are using iPads?
Yes, we use iPads. So I tagged with it via iPad.
Okay.
And it's really an iPad app. So you just download the app, and then you can do the same thing. I can't give anybody a login. We get a certain amount of logins, so that our whole staff has logins, and they can access it. And our tags, I can tag from my account, and it syncs to all the tags associated within our program. So whatever
okay,
I'm tagging during practice, Coach Angles, Coach Bain, or Coach Eichler, Coach Check, or Coach Sheen, our strength coach, because he likes to watch regarding our guys' movement and how they're moving, can pull up any parts of practice that I've tagged. I can pull up any parts of practice in general, but my tags are already there, so I'm saving them a ton of time and a ton of work.
So one last question on Key Motion, because I find this very interesting. I know more programs are adopting this kind of technology, or specifically Key Motion, but I'm curious about how actively engaged the players are with all the great data that's being produced. So you painted a picture of a player going to the dining hall, let's say, after practice and sitting on a computer looking at the stuff. Is that really happening, honestly? Are people really using it to help to improve their play?
Yeah, I would say about half of our guys actively respond and ask for film from practice or specific actions. So we'll have, at the beginning, I would send it out to everybody, and not everyone would always respond, and you could sort of tell who was using it and who wasn't. But the guys who would ask questions about it or follow up or make reference of it the next day or a week later, you know it's impacting them. Now, kids don't always like to respond to everything, so just because they're not responding doesn't mean they're not watching it or not using it. But the fact that I'm getting active responses and active engagement from at least half the roster means that they're definitely using it. Some, obviously, more than others. There's two or three that are obsessed with it and want me to send basically the entire practice to them as soon as they're in the locker room so they can sit there before bed and watch it all and learn and hear what coach is saying and adjust and react accordingly. And there's others that like it for different pieces. They kind of just want to see themselves, so they want to see what they did wrong. But it's definitely in use a lot. We get great value from it.
Great. Jonathan, why don't you touch on a little bit of what your game day duties are, what it's kind of like, how it's different from other days, what you're doing during the game, are you actually using any software during the game, and then what are kind of the roles, people may not even understand what the roles are of the other assistant coaches, the full-time assistant coaches, who are on Jim Engel's staff, like what does everybody do on a game day?
Okay, well, we're recording this on Tuesday right here, and it's actually game day right now as we play Hofstra tonight. Obviously, the result will hopefully be in our favor, but it will already be known by the time this podcast airs. It's our first home game with students back. We had two home games last week over Thanksgiving break. And on a game day, I love game days, obviously, because you work hard 365 days a year for the 28 or 30 or 32 if you're fortunate to have a run like we had last year, 35 game days. And it's great to see all the hard work come together. And I also love them because they're sort of more relaxed up until the game. So our staff gets in on a game day, supposedly getting in at 7:30. We're getting in all different times, anywhere between 8 to 10. And then I'm recording this podcast now, but I would make sure everything's set up, the locker room is all good, clean. The locker room is all clean, uniforms are in the locker room. our team room's all set up and organized. We have Cliff Bars and other snacks ready for the guys. And then I will make sure that if we're playing on the road, all of our compliance stuff, all of our travel forms are in, the whole nine yards. And then we'll shoot around here at about 1:15, so at about 12:30, 12:45, I'll head down with some of our managers to make sure practice is all set, shoot around is all set up. And then at about 2:30, I'll take the scout that one of our assistant coaches created, the movie video he created of the other team, and I will set that up for our team meal. So right before our team meal, we'll watch the scout again for the opposing team at about 3:15, and then at 3:30, we'll have our pregame meal. Our guys will disperse and do whatever, and they're required to be back by about 5:15 to be stretched and ready to go at 5:40, our strength coach, for 7 p.m. tip. We'll warm them up for 15 or 20 minutes. And then at 6 o'clock, there's 60 minutes on the clock, and our guys will go through whatever warm-up they want to do. But we have a 60-minute, we have like a 30-minute routine, and then we come in at about 32 as a team, and we'll get ready to play ball. I will make sure during this time that everything's set up ticket-wise. I handle ticket requests, so I'll make sure all of our tickets are proper. I always give the ticket guy my number in case there's any issue for whatever reason to call me, because we always want to make sure that that's taken care of and our fans are able to get in the gym. And then I'll check the book to make sure all of our guys' numbers and name are spelled correctly and in the book properly, so we don't get an administration technical foul, and I'll put in our starting lineup. And then come game time, I will sit there and chart. I actually have a unique perspective. It's actually awesome. Coach Angles has the director of basketball operations as a sort of right-hand man sit in the first seat right next to him. He doesn't sit much, by the way, but it's in theory next to him. So I'm sitting there in the first seat charting fouls to make sure that whenever somebody gets in foul trouble, I alert the assistant coaches who then tell the head coach, or I tell Coach Angles directly that someone's in foul trouble so that we don't miss out on a chance to either attack somebody else's team when they're in foul trouble or get one of our guys off the floor. And then I'll also try and scout play calls. So I'll try and hear what the other team's shouting out so that we can try and alert our team what's going on. I'll give that information to our assistant coach, who will try and adjust and react accordingly during timeouts. And then I sit there and chart some of our own play calls so that I can kind of stat out how we're doing offensively with various formations and sets and plays. That's sort of my game day responsibility. And post-game, I'll make sure obviously the food post-game food gets here on time. It's distributed to our staff and players. And then I'll handle the video operations to make sure that either if we're on the road that we acquire a video feed, .mov file or a disc, or I will give one of those to the opposing team because it's the home team's job to do so. In addition, all teams are required within 24 hours to upload our games onto Synergy Sports. Synergy Sports technology is great. It's a one-stop shop for all teams' games. It breaks down your game for you, and it's a scouting service that the whole country uses so that 24 hours after our game, Seton Hall can technically go in and upload and watch our game against Hofstra tonight. We play them on Thursday and get the latest and greatest of what the Lions brought to the table tonight. As for the assistant coaches, one of them is the scout coach. We rotate. We have three assistant coaches who do scouts. Coach Angles obviously helps out and has a great hand in that and watches the film as well. But it's one of the assistants' jobs to scout out all their specific plays and tendencies. And they're the coach that's used not the most engaged per se, but they're the one that's locked in. They're the ones that are required to match up our guys with specific personnel, specific players. So anytime a sub from either team goes in the game, it's that scout coach's job to rematch our team up to make sure we don't have any mismatches one way or the other. And then the other two coaches are just also engaged coaching the team and trying to help out any way they can. And then the head coach is the one, he's the showman. He's the one who gets to call the plays and call the shots and get all the glory when we win, in addition to our players. So
Jonathan, it sounds like that's really amazing. Among the many things you do, it sounds like the highest stress activity is taking care of all the food. There's been a recurring theme in this conversation. You've referenced snacks and food about five times. So I assume the pressure's on to make sure you deliver the goods at the right moment.
Yeah, that's one of those things where you get no credit for doing it, but if it's messed up, how dare it be wrong?
So exactly.
You just got to be on your toes and ready to go. And if a game starts at 7 and you know it's going to end at about 9, make sure the food's delivered at 8:45. So by the time we break in the locker room at about 9, 10, or 9:15, even if they're 10 or 15 minutes late, it's definitely there. And then you just distribute accordingly. It's a little bit of an art and science to it, I've learned.
So you're catering in from outside, or you're doing it from Columbia?
Catering in from outside.
Oh, interesting. Okay. And then what about the opposing team? Do the Hofstra guys get any Clif Bars or anything good, or do they just get on the bus and leave?
That's on them. When we're on the road, we bring our own snacks. So.
Aha. Okay. Good to know. All right. So let me ask you about one of the duties you referenced earlier, although you did not mention in the rundown of game day responsibilities, and that is social media. What exactly are you doing to help with social media? And I want to talk for a second about a big milestone tonight where I believe this is the first time that a Columbia game will be broadcast live on Facebook, a Facebook Live initiative that's been done by the Ivy League Digital Network and New Lion. So I think this is the premiere of that. So first talk about your some general social activities that you're involved with, and then talk for a second about Facebook Live.
So when Coach Angles took over in April, he wanted to stress, emphasize social media and thinks that, and I agree with him, that players, high school players, even college players, need something tangible. They need to actually be able to see the messages we're trying to portray and illustrate. And there's no better platform for that than social media. And so is my – we have a sports information director who's tremendous, Mike Kowalski, and he puts out a lot of stuff, but he's also only one guy. So it's not fair for him to do everything. And I have a little bit more of a behind-the-scenes feel being in the heat of the battle in the moment at all times. So we sort of just – myself and Sydney Park, one of our managers, our head manager, she is actually really good with graphics. So we've sort of just taken it upon ourselves over the course of the summer and promoting our summer basketball camps and the like to make additional graphics besides what Mike does. So Luke Petrozic, one of our best players, has a nickname Luke Skywalker. Sydney made a graphic with a Columbia logo background in anticipation of tonight's game with Luke Petrozic's face in place of Luke Skywalker. It's just sort of a little joke to put on social media to try and gain attention and garner attraction for our game. And then we also made an Instagram page in May that we now have over 1,000 followers, and we try and promote our brand and our message and our team through that. We're really just trying to highlight the entire Columbia basketball student-athlete experience because it truly is special.
That's great. So what? Let's review briefly the platforms and priorities. So you mentioned Instagram, obviously. You're on Twitter, Facebook. Anything else?
That's it. We have Facebook. Mike Kowalski is pretty much in charge of the Facebook. He's in charge of all three accounts, but he's the only one who really uses the Facebook one. Just because for whatever reason, I found that one from almost an outsider's perspective to be not as easily the user interface experience for Facebook from the back end of it is not as easy as posting, in my opinion, to Twitter and Instagram. Now, that may be some bias because I love Twitter and I use Instagram frequently as well. So maybe there's some bias there, but Twitter, we'll post tweets and like yesterday we did a t-shirt giveaway. We bought t-shirts and are giving them out, white Columbia basketball t-shirts, to try and gain more fan support. And we blasted that through Instagram and Twitter and gave away about 300 t-shirts to all students, any students who wanted to come by. All they had to do was come by the basketball office. And every time we gave away a t-shirt, we were able to tell them and advertise our team that we have a game at 7 p.m. tomorrow night, which is now tonight, obviously, in hopes of garnering more fan support. Our thought process behind that was that if you give a Columbia student a t-shirt, they're more likely to come to a game. And if they're going to come to a game, they're probably going to wear that t-shirt. So if they're going to come, they're going to be wearing Columbia basketball apparel. So it's a win-win.
Cool. Jonathan, you come from Western New York. You were at a pretty prestigious school at Vassar. You're now at Columbia. And you're in the graduate program. How did you get into the graduate program? Was it something that you thought of before you came? And what do you expect to get out of it? Obviously, you want to continue in coaching, but are there aspects of the program that you've now almost gone all the way through that you think you can apply to whatever it is that you do going forward, especially in coaching?
So I knew at a young age, basically around my bar mitzvah, as soon as I realized that the NBA was not a realistic dream, that as soon as I hung up the laces playing basketball, I wanted to stay in the game and be involved in any way, shape, or form. And I took up a knack and interest in coaching and learning how to become a coach, what coaches do, studying different coaches. And it was, I was fortunate enough that one of my best friends from home, his older brother Adam Cohen, was trying to do the same thing just about 8 years ahead of me. So he was going through navigating from graduate assistant to director of basketball operations to assistant coach. And he's had a really successful, he's 29 years old, and he's one of the assistants at Stanford. So he's had a really successful run with this, and he's been a great mentor to me. And I sought out his advice when I was in college, and he told me basically what I had to do to put myself in the best chance to have an opportunity come about. So I went to the Final Four. That would have been spring of 2015 in Indianapolis, and just sort of tried to meet as many people as I could. I came across somebody who had a relationship here with the Columbia staff, and their graduate manager position was going to be open if it was not already. I soon thereafter interviewed, and about a month later I got the position. And once getting the position, I knew I had to take graduate classes, and I was scrambling a little bit because a month after the Final Four, it puts you in about beginning of May. So I'm really scrambling. I studied up and saw that there was a sports management program here, and then I learned about it and realized how well-renowned it was in the whole nine yards. And the match made in heaven, sort of. I applied and got in, and was really fortunate and lucky. So I sort of got into the back door. I got in thinking I was going to be, or knowing I'd be working with the basketball team first, and then a student. I got in the sports management program, and I've always loved sports my whole life afterwards. So I was really fortunate and lucky in that regard. Then, now once almost done with the program, I'll finish up the semester this time and have two more classes to take in the spring. I've learned, I still want to be a coach for sure, 100% want to be a college basketball coach, but there's definitely been aspects of the program, branding, marketing, social media, different various things that I can implement and will plan to implement into my program one day if they haven't already been done so here at Columbia. So it's been I've really had a chance to learn a lot, meet so many wonderful, terrific people in the sports world and sports business world that will only help me in my network moving forward, and I couldn't be more grateful of it, to be honest.
That's great. Jonathan, beyond the direct influences you have from people like Jim Engels, the assistant coaches and some of the administrators who I'm sure teach you a lot of things, who else are you paying attention to? Who are you studying? How are you making yourself better, smarter as an administrator and aspiring coach?
Well, as an aspiring coach, I try and watch as much basketball as possible. And when doing so, I try and watch it from the perspective of a coach, not just a fan who's doing an eye at a great crossover, a nice dunk, or a sweet alley-oop, or a three-point shot. So I'm trying to put myself in their shoes. What would I do in this situation? And I'm also trying to learn from Coach Engels. He's got an unbelievable wealth of knowledge, being an assistant coach for so long, and then a head coach, unbelievably successful around NGIT, that he's looking to carry here. And then I also learned a great deal from Coach Smith and his entire staff, and try and keep in touch with them a little bit, and keep talking X's and O's. And then I try and talk X's and O's in basketball with anybody I can, whether it's my old college coach, B.J. Dunn, or it's Adam Cohen, or it's my father, who's arguably the best coach. He's definitely the best coach I've ever had, but he's arguably the best coach I've ever come across. So I'm really just trying to learn from as many people as possible. You know, you can never stop learning, and just sort of try and be a sponge and take it all in and adopt this from someone else that's successful and adopt something else from someone else who's successful, and just sort of become your own coach and your own person with your own successful ways to adopt from someone else, from everyone else, and make it your own.
Cool. And, Jonathan, before we let you go, just a couple things about the program and being around the program, especially with the recent success. I'm sure that there have been some interesting characters or unique people that have come in who sit in the stands, and we've talked about the infamous Jerry, and we're going to get to Jerry at some point in the next couple weeks to enlighten everybody about Columbia's superfan. But who are some of the other people? I think you guys had a pretty interesting visit a couple weeks ago from a pretty prominent Columbia alum who's done some interesting things in basketball. But are there others who come in, or coaches who will come in, or people come and speak to the team? Is there some on your highlight list that you've been pretty amazed that you've been around and met through the Columbia program?
Yeah, so a couple weeks ago, David Stern came by, and that's the prominent Columbia alum that I believe you're referencing, but they do
Correct.
Come around so often that I could be mistaken.
Uh-huh.
and Commissioner Stern came by and watched practice and got a chance to chat, and actually a cool story. He walked in, and one of the first things he said was, "Who's your guy that's in charge of Key Motion?" And I got a chance to talk to him for 20 or 30 minutes strictly about Key Motion and how we use it, and he's considering investing, I believe, so he was trying to learn as much as he could about the product with someone who's in the heat of battle with it. So that was a very cool opportunity. Kevin Eastman, and a assistant coach, or now he's a former assistant coach with the Celtics with Doc Rivers, and then followed Doc to LA, and was in their he was the vice president of business of basketball operations for them the past couple seasons, and actually just stepped aside to pursue a career in public speaking and mentorship, and he came by and spoke to our team about a month ago, and that was a really cool experience that I think the guys loved. And then someone else who I don't think gets enough love, because I didn't even know he would come by last year, and I didn't even know who he was. It wasn't until this year when I decided, this guy comes around a lot and everybody always treats him really well. I'm going to Google him and figure out who he is. And it turned out to be an economics professor here at Columbia who also happens to be the U.S. Soccer Federation head, Sunil Gulati. So there's some characters and some awesome people and some well-known people and high-profile people that come around our program on a daily basis, whether it's to stop in and say hi, whether it's via email or phone call with Coach Engels, but that care about Columbia, they care about Columbia basketball, and they want to see how we're doing and are truly engaged and care about our success. So it's very cool. Very, very
great.
Cool.
Great.
Hey, Jonathan, before we finish the show, why don't you tell everybody how they can find you and the team on the different platforms, specific handles and addresses?
Okay. Well, on Facebook, Columbia University Men's Basketball, with the Facebook Live event that is tonight, we are hosting, I just found out last night, our game will be streamed on Facebook Live for the first, I believe it's first ever time in college basketball. It'll be a live streaming of a Division I game free of charge on Facebook Live.
Right.
Instagram, you can follow our team at SeaLionsMVP, both Instagram and Twitter. And myself, both Instagram and Twitter at Jonathan Sapphire, just my first and last name spelled out. And I try and stay engaged and up to date on sports, news, business, the whole nine yards through Twitter, really. Twitter is the best modern-day newspaper, in my opinion, and it's the way I stay in touch and engaged, and I really get a lot of great exposure in reading different stuff from Twitter.
Jonathan, thanks for joining us. Once again, our guest is Jonathan Sapphire, and we've been pronouncing his name wrong for all this time, now that we got it right. Director of Basketball Operations for the Columbia University men's basketball team. Jonathan, we'll see you along the lines, whether it's in the classroom or around the gym in the next couple of weeks.
Awesome. Thank you very much. And go Lions.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. Really appreciate it. Good luck with the rest of the season.
Thank you.
Once again, we'd like to thank Jonathan Sapphire for joining us. This was another edition of the Columbia University Sports Podcast Basketball Edition. I'm Joe Favorito along with Tom Richardson. Tom, we'll see you around the campus.
Thanks, Joe. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Cusp Show, the Columbia University Sports Podcast. I'm Tom Richardson and my co-host is Joe Favorito. And our production assistant this week is Columbia student Maurice Eisenman. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple's podcast app, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and other key platforms. You can also find it at blogtalkradio.com/The Cusp Show. And you can get in touch with us on Twitter at CU_SPS_sports. Also, you can find out more about our program, the Columbia University Sports Management Program, by going online at sps.columbia.edu/sports-management. Thank you very much. We'll see you next time.